Open public input, item number two. Thank you. We have a number of folks. I think most of you are familiar with the rules of engagement here. 3 minutes, the beeper goes off, and you can finish your comments, but make those finishing remarks rather brief, please. We want to keep it to as 3 minutes as close as possible. And I'm going to call you up two at a time, so it just keeps the rotation going. So we will start with Chris Wickers and Ryan Melvin, please.
That's a real idea. Yeah.
Chris.
Ryan.
Chris. Okay, Chris, take it away.
Commissioners, Chairman Smith. My name is Chris Wickers, and I'd like to discuss on behalf of the Puget Sound Crab Association the future of the Puget Sound commercial crab as it applies to Policy 3609. I'm from Oak Harbor, and I've fished in Alaska my entire life. During college, I ran another fisher's boat, and after college, I had an opportunity to buy a Puget Sound crab permit. I didn't realize this was 6 years ago, 1 year before the current policy was under review, and didn't realize the repercussions it would have. Due to abundance increases, we have had an opportunity to fish, but the problem lies in the assurance of a season at all. This year was an indicator of my concerns, because in many areas, including 2 East where I live, before the season there was no assurance of any fishing time. Now again, with high crab population and the valiant efforts of our fish and game representatives, we received abundance increases and were able to have a season, but that may not happen in the future. Also, with the increased competition and shortened seasons, I've had to invest in a third permit along with many other fishers. And as I see young fishers wanting to get into the commercial crab fishery, it becomes more difficult for them to risk or even acquire an initial investment of leasing a permit or buying a permit with no assurances of a season at all. My brother's an example of this. He's currently in the U.S. Air Force, looking to get out next year, and he's wanted to get into the fishery for years, but without a policy review to assure the commercial fleet a viable opportunity to harvest crab, he fears he might not be able to. I fear this is the same mentality with many other young fishers, and with existing fishermen getting older and looking to retire to sell their permits, and younger fishers not having the opportunity to get into it, the concern lies, is there a realistic commercial fishery for the future generations? I've personally seen the effects of a recreational priority fishery in Alaska, where the commercial fishery has been depleted to the point of the state talking about a buyout program. This is one reason I entered commercial crabbing, because there seemed to be a harmonious balance between recreational, commercial, and tribal fleets, but in recent years the balance has changed. Now, it hasn't tipped so far that it can't be brought back into alignment, and we've had fishing seasons. We haven't totally lost our seasons, but many other fishermen fear that we might. And I'm not saying that, I know times change, the recreational isn't going anywhere, and I don't want it to. I think it's a great thing. But with the increased efficiency of the recreational fleet and decreased participation in younger fishers, it's going to be harder and harder to achieve a sustainable commercial fishery. This is why I respectfully request a review of Policy 3609.
Thank you, Chris. Any questions from the Commission? Ward Norton, please, and Ryan.
Chairman Smith and esteemed commissioners, my name is Ryan Melvin. I'm here representing the young new fishers interested in getting the opportunity to enter the Puget Sound commercial crab fishery. Unfortunately, the manner in which Policy C-3609 currently reads, the state commercial fleet has no guaranteed assurance of a share of the fishery to allow a new investor to take a business bottle to a bank to get the funding for purchase or even lease of a boat and or permits that would ensure the creditor that their investment is secure. In recent years, the commercial fleet has not known until a week to 10 days prior to the season start date how much crabs they will be allowed to harvest or what areas may or may not be open in the upcoming season. Recently, the Commission revised a similar policy for the spot shrimp, wherein each user group was assured a percentage of the fishery by region, and we are wondering why our policy could not follow similar guidelines. In doing that, it would not only create a commercial fishery that could continue to be profitable and stable for the future, but would allow a new fisher to confidently invest into what could be a lifelong profession, and at the same time still preserve a quality state recreational fishery as well. Some minor revisions to the current policy could also aid the agency to more adequately manage the equity with the tribes in the South Sound as well. Currently, the commercial fleet has been largely reliant on in-season abundance increases based on unusually healthy stocks, without which our seasons would be significantly shorter than they already are. At the present time, the current abundance of crabs in the Puget Sound has been high, but has been hiding the underlying problem. If indeed that abundance of crab falters and is not available for harvest, the state commercial fleet could be facing an unprecedented turn of events in the form of minimal to no seasons in some regions. The recreational fishers have become increasingly more efficient at harvesting crabs, especially in high abundance years. Along with these increases in harvest numbers comes an increase in what has been termed EUC, or estimated unreported catch, which is simply the indiscretion of the sportsman to report the correct amount of catch, or more frequently, the overharvest of crabs. This EUC has also created tensions in the negotiations between state and tribal managers and could quite possibly be at least minimized with slight modifications to the policy. Again, these are just concerning issues of young fishers looking to break into the Puget Sound crab fishery. We simply have no real assurance that we'll be able to go to work each year. Thank you for your time here today, and respectfully request that you place policy C3609 on your February agenda for review, and consider allowing both the commercial and recreational proponents to present their points of view.
Thank you, Ryan. Questions? Yes. Yeah. Commissioner Keel.
Quick question before you go.
Yes, sir.
You mentioned some tweaks, perhaps, that you folks are contemplating. Have you put anything down on paper yet, or anything in writing? Some specific changes you'd like in the policy, or that you'd like the commission to consider?
Yeah, the board, the Puget Sound Crab Association, the board has come up with a few of their own ideas, some bullet points that we were kind of told to, leave the details out of it for the present meeting, just because we don't have the time to go into all of that. But if you're willing to see that, I know that we'd be more than happy to get that down to you.
Well, I would encourage folks to kind of maybe put things down in writing, and then also maybe include specific language or specific changes that you'd like the commission to consider, and then the rationale for those changes.
Okay.
I think that would be helpful. Many of you folks have come and had expressed your concerns about the policy. I think it would be useful to kind of move the ball forward if you could kind of clearly articulate what those are, how your changes could be incorporated in the policy, and still maintain a robust recreational fishery. So that's
absolutely
that's my suggestion.
We would be, as the association as a whole, we would be happy to do that and get that information to you.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. And there again, for someone living on the other side of the state, it would be nice to be able to understand how it's split between recreation, commercial, and, how they're divided up and who gets what, when, or how, and everything else. So, no, it'd be nice for me to have a better understanding how it all works.
Commissioner?
And I think also important is the concept of how the seasons are set. You know, that going to the bank and not being able to get a loan really struck home with me. So that's probably more a question for our WDFW staff to weigh in on and explain. You know, I'm sure they're saying, well, we can't set the season until we know the population and all of that. So I'm sure there's good reasoning behind why they've done that. But in consideration of what you're suggesting, I think knowing that as well would be helpful, because what are the reasons we can't set that season sooner would be good to know.
Mr. Carpenter.
Thank you. Ryan, that's a good good thoughts. I think what Commissioner Keogh said makes a lot of sense. The difficult part in my day job, I own a business and I'm pretty sensitive to economics, and is that you know, if a quota was established and it was determined shortly after the season opened that those crab discs certainly were not there,
mm-hmm.
and Rich Childers had to get an emergency reg to close the season, that's the flip side of what you're asking for. So there has to be a happy medium where you can plan your business life,
mm-hmm.
and the department can ultimately manage the crab resource like is all of our responsibility. So
right.
we need to talk more about that.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right.
Commissioner Gribble?
Yes, I agree. I would like to have a review of this. From the briefing we got earlier this year, it seems like the crab population in Puget Sound is very healthy. And I was amazed at the harvest levels that are maintained. And so I was a little bit surprised that there isn't a more consistent method of establishing seasons. Because
mm-hmm.
from what we've learned, at least the populations are healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a good abundance. So, yes, please provide us with the information from the
okay.
association. That would... Bob's exactly right. We need to have something in front of us that we can review. Would be very helpful.
Great.
And, Ryan, thank you for your comments. And I think also it's in the spirit of what we did 5 years ago to revisit.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we're saying is that this is what we talked about before,
right.
5 years down the road. But I think what the commission is saying is that we would welcome specifics
mm-hmm.
and how we can all do a better job on this. But we need input from you and the association.
Well, we're looking forward to giving that to you.
Thank you.
Thank you
Any
all.
Any other comments? Ward Norton, please. Oh, I'm sorry. Joe Purdy's.
Verdose. Ward Norton, and I live in Quilcene, and I wanted to take this brief opportunity to thank you for authorizing that test groundfish flounder fishery in Daybob here earlier this year, and I thought it was very successful, though not too many people participated because there's no docks and the ramps are a little bit limited. I would encourage you in the future, I think this decision will come before you in probably the next year, to authorize expansion of it to at least the docks as far south as Pleasant Harbor. That's where all the kids are, and that would include the Boy Scout camp, where several hundred kids have to get a merit badge for learning how to catch, clean, and eat a fish. So thank you again for authorizing this limited opening, and in the future, please expand it at least a little bit for the docks. And also, as I was mentioning earlier, as a side note, I am a wholesaler of fishing tackle, and I am also a former fisheries biologist, and I do run size projections for my industry and the commercial troll industry out at Nia Bay and some of the tribes, other tribes. And I've already done my projections for next year's salmon returns. And it looks like the coho returns will be possibly even epic, if not outstanding. Chinook runs for the Columbia and the coast, not so much. Worst case scenario, it'll be a collapse, and at best a mediocre Chinook year. But coho is looking really good for next year. Any questions?
I must comment, fishing merit badge was my first merit badge. My dad was the counselor, so...
That Camp Parsons down on by near Point Whitney has about 700 kids a week, all summer long going there, and it's almost scary to go to their new dining hall and have seen all eating at once.
Been there.
So.
Any other questions? Thank you, George. Ron Gardner and Joe.
Good morning, Commission and Director. Joe Verdose, President of Puget Sound Shrimp Association. I'm on a follow-up from last month, get my dates right. And I hope some of you got a chance to look at the book. I particularly impressed the first line of the book, that the American contradiction is that we... one of our most abundant food sources we don't eat. We actually ship it out of the country, and we don't eat it ourselves. And I'm here to present to you as what I really am. I am not a fisherman. I'm a seafood delivery system. And by that, I deliver shrimp to and prawns to Seattle, to Chinese markets in Beacon Hill and places like that. 5-6 years ago, I tried starting a, actually 5 years, I went through a 2-year process to get permission to sell in Pike Place Market and sell Kunstreim shrimp there, which was an experience for a country boy sitting in the middle of Seattle and selling shrimp to fresh cooked shrimp to people. And it was interesting. And to see the number of people that live around Pike Place and come down there and they go, this is good. This is the best thing I ever ate. And the local cop in the beat would come and drag people, eat some of this, eat some of this. But that also was a timed for the shrimp policy review at that point, and my access to enough coonstripe shrimp was changed at that point. My access to prawns was also cut back at that point as well. I lost a number of weeks, and the remaining weeks we have are similarly uncertain because every year, as I remind you, that the recreational prawn fishermen do not catch their quota prawns, and then we get that. And people say, well, why are you complaining? You know, you get access to the prawns, but we don't have any certainty of it. And it's because you took us down from 50% the previous year to 30% after that. So every year we're on a knife edge. How much are we actually going to get? Prior to the policy change, we were allowed, and this is set by the legislature in 2001 when we were an emerging fishery at that point, which is when the modern prawn fishery started, which is in 2001. The legislature gave us about 40% of that. Because of the increases of the prawns in Puget Sound, actually particularly in the straits and areas that we fished, our quota grew up to about 50%. We expected a rebalancing, and actually going back to what the legislature set us at was at 40%, but we were hacked back to 30%. So anyway, in the meantime, you know, we have been harvesting what the wrecks have not caught. But I think it's time to revisit the policy, admit the fact that it didn't work quite the way we wanted. You can't just give arid wrecks everything you want, and if they can't catch it, you should re-examine the policy. I also think you should get more of our taxes. I think you actually are B&O taxes, and the monies that we generate should go to you. Fish taxes, because you're rewarded for the number of licenses you sell, recreational licenses, but you're not rewarded for the economic activity that we perform and the gross amounts of money that we provide to the state budget. And I will support you in any way, shape, or form that I can to get better funding from commercial activities.
Talk to your legislator, Joe.
I will. I have good relationships with them.
Merry Christmas, Joe.
Yeah, thank you. Any other comments? Solicitor or not? Dave Cronquist, please. And Ron, it's up to you.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, Director, Deputy Director, Commissioners. Well, I might not agree. I was one of the shrimp advisors with what everything Joe said here today, but I will say I agree with the funding, that the commercial funding going into the general funds is wrong. And we've been working on it, but we need to do a lot better. Their money has to come back in and go to WDFW and support our fisheries. It just, that's atrocious the way that the money is not brought back into our fisheries. But that isn't what I was here to talk about, but that is one issue that I have too, is our fisheries should be funded by both sides if both sides are going to do them. What I'm here to talk to you today about, you should have a handout, a flyer, is halibut, the Puget Sound halibut, which is Eastern Straits, Puget Sound, San Juans, and clear out to Area 5. So what we have here is, it's kind of funny, six of us made the policy that is now the inner halibut fishery that was pretty much non-existent fishery back in 2003. And Dave here, there's three of us in this room that crafted it out of the six, which I thought was pretty interesting today looking around the room. What we have going on is our halibut fisheries, our accounting methods are not very good. California just made a run at our Area 2A halibut. They want, 2A is California, Oregon, and Washington. They took a shot at taking more halibut from us because the way they opened up down there, they're finding
our halibut, not the California halibut, our halibut down there in California now. And they open the season, and they count at the end, and they go way over. So we went into PFMC, slapped their hands, because they want more quota. And we said, no, we're not going to give you any because you're not doing in-season management. Well, when we send our WDFW staff into IPHC meetings, we don't have the Puget Sound numbers here collected. It's not done. It's the very last thing they do. So they walk in setting the season without proper numbers here, which doesn't make us look good. So we don't have a real good fight with this, with the IPHC when we can't even bring our own numbers. How do we tell California no? So what I'm hoping that we can do, and I've talked to some legislators about this, I'd like to see the catch record card for halibut cut off, charge the same thing as, what is it, the Dungeness crab endorsement, make it a fee. So now we tailor down, just like we did with crab. We got rid of all the catch record cards, and only the halibut fishers are going to buy this card now, and we'll get those numbers down to where they should be. And one thing that we really missed with crab is if we're going to assign a penalty for that being late, it does, that funding does not go into the general fund. It goes back to WDFW. If you'd like to go ahead and read, I put a lot of points down here. I think I covered a lot, but Rich Childers and everybody did an excellent job with the online reporting for crab. They made it easy. The website, you click on where you want to go, where you want to fish. It tells you what's open, when. I would like to see us actually tailor a lot of fisheries after what we've done. The online reporting is excellent. I love it. I can go through, do my crab, and be done and have my verification number. There's no reason. If we did this by June 30th, we could have all the data done, turned in to Eric Craig, and we would have accurate numbers setting the seasons. Phil Anderson, I talked about this, I don't know, 7, 8 years ago, and he knew the numbers weren't good out here. I just don't think they knew where to go. So that's what my main talk is today.
Thanks, Ron.
Thank you.
Any questions? Yes, Commissioner Carpenter.
Yeah, all I want to say is I get a lot of input from constituents about halibut, and I think you're on the right track here, and I think we need to push this through and get it done because real-time management is a must.
Absolutely. If I can get your support, I think I can push it through on the legislative level. I don't know how long this is going to take, but I've already started running it across them.
Good. Okay. Yes, I'm sure.
Thanks, Ron. You're always bringing such important issues to us, and I appreciate every time you come and testify. I'd like to ask the Fish Committee to take a look at this, put it on your agenda, because to me this is very important. If we're not getting a fair shake in the internet, in the PFMC or the other forms, we need to pay attention.
And we do have a lot of other issues on the ground fish and PFMC on the coast that we're dealing with too. But it's just the way, I think a lot of people don't understand how the management works on the ocean, which makes it a lot different and more challenging. Thank you.
Good. Mr. Grable.
I like your suggestion about better real-time reporting as they do with the crab. And I want to ask staff how performance is on that, how the public is doing. And they can answer it later, I guess. But if we're looking at an online reporting to replace a lot of what's being currently done with punch cards, which has been done for decades, and it's not a good system. The technology is available now, but we have to make sure that people are complying, and so we can look to the recreational crabbers and learn that.
Yeah, I understand that because I was also part of the Yellow Eye when it first came to the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
When we were going to lose the entire ocean, the bottom fishing completely. And I stepped in, we figured out a way, they were going to shut it down to 3 small postage stamp areas. Swiftshire Bank, by Blue Dot, and then one down, which is now called the southwest corner of the sea closure. And I went back, Michelle and I and Phil worked this over, came back, and we said, okay, where you want to take 2 of these 3 areas are loaded with yellow eye. This is a bad idea. And remember, this is a first for us. We hadn't dealt with this before. And that's why I came inside here and started working on the bottom fish issues too. And we averted the biggest shutdown in the Puget Sound just recently through NOAA. You're going to hear from them and Dave Lowry But through our fish descender and rockfish identification, we just about lost, it was on track to lose 50% of the Eastern Strait, San Juan's Hood Canal, and the entire Puget Sound. We stopped that. So we've been engaged in the fish management business for quite a while, and the environmentalists are the ones we got to, and the federal government are the ones we really got to watch. But I understand what you're saying. We had 4 days of halibut on the coast last year, and they do real fast management out there. But what happened was, I think we had a 105,000-pound quota. Well, they said we took 70,000 on the first 2 days. The next week is the next 2 days. Day number three, they didn't announce that it was closing the following day when everybody's gone to La Push. They spent their $2,000 or whatever each. They don't get a day that day. And, you know, to do it that fast wasn't good. It's a whole different system on the coast, and I'm not saying we mess with it. I think they're probably on top of that. But I'm only referring to the Puget Sound part.
Thank you.
Okay? Thank you.
Brian Mackey, please. And Dave.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Commissioners, Director Unsworth, and staff. Just three short topics. First, I want to thank you for coming to Port Townsend for your meeting. It's great to see you out here, and I hope it becomes a regular stop on your tours. On a personal level, I want to thank you for your dedication and time to our state's natural resources. It's not always an easy job that you have, but I've seen a lot of, from a personal standpoint, I've seen marked improvements since I've been back for the last 15 years, and the communications and transparency with the staff is getting much, much better, and I just want to thank you for your time and effort. And then on third item is on behalf of the North Olympic Peninsula Chapter of Puget Sound Anglers, I want to extend our thanks and appreciation to the department, and particularly the hatchery folks, and drilling down to the bottom level to the Dungeness Hatchery Complex personnel at primarily Dungeness and Herd Creek. Our chapter puts on a kids' fishing day every third Saturday in May. We average 300 to 500 kids around a third acre pond. They all go home with, almost all go home with two fish ranging from 1 pound to 4 pounds. And the department supplies 3,000 to 4,000 fish every year for us. We buy the food. The hatchery folks at the Herd Creek Hatchery take care of the feeding. We help with some pond cleaning. We help with coho spawning. Anyway, it's a joint effort, and just want to say thank you to staff and to you folks for letting us get 300 to 400 kids involved in fishing activities every year. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Good to see you again, Dave. Just wanted to point out that Dave's been a volunteer and done some very important things with our enforcement advisory group and a retired enforcement officer himself, as well as the work he does with the Puget Sound Anglers group. So he's one of our star constituents. Just wanted to point that out.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. And can we get an invitation to join you next year for the
kids'
yeah,
fishing?
Yeah.
Third Saturday in May.
Okay.
8 o'clock, the word goes off.
Okay. Thanks for doing that. That's, I think we, in our daily works, all of us forget the next generation all too often, and that's the future of our natural resources. So efforts like that, I think, will pay off for generations to come. Don Dybeck, please, and Brian. Yes.
Good morning, and again, thank you for taking time out and coming over here to Port Townsend. It's a big deal, like you said, to get over here with the wind and whatnot. We appreciate you giving us this opportunity and this venue to voice our concerns on certain subjects. My name is Brian Mackey, and I've lived in Anacortes and been a longtime avid sportsman and commercial fisherman. I'm here to address some of the wording you were asking for specifics and possible changes in crab policy C-3609. On page 3 of the policy, I would like to give attention to the wording in paragraph 4. It states that in regions 4, 5, and 6, that the crab fishery will be managed for the exclusive benefit of the recreational fishery. I would like to give attention to the word exclusive. Over the last 3 years, there has been over 200,000 pounds of crab in these areas that's available to harvest by state fishers that has went unharvested. If the wording was simply changed to primarily from the word exclusive, It would give the commercial sector the opportunity to harvest those quotas that is left in those regions after the recreational sector is closed. Let me clarify that these are quotas that the state and the tribes have agreed upon and are set ahead of time. Because of the wording as it is right now, the department's hands are tied. They can't do anything because of the word exclusive. All that would be required would be a simple word change in that section of the policy. When this policy was put in place in 2010, there was discussion of revisiting it in 5 years. For this reason, I would like to see policy C-3609 revisited at the upcoming February 12th meeting. If you have any questions, I will do my best to answer them. And in regards to what you guys stated to the other young gentleman earlier, we do have a lot of specifics, but the reason we didn't bring them here is because we get 3 minutes. And we are looking forward to getting some time with you guys to talk about some of the different issues. But that's just one specific where if one word was changed, it's a big deal. I appreciate your time.
Mr. Keel.
Thanks for your comment. And that's exactly what I was kind of looking for, some sort of, you know, specific language. Sure. As far as the timing is concerned, you know, I obviously we didn't expect to get anything today.
No, that's exactly.
February is, you know, will be upon us quickly, and I assume we'll have some sort of briefing prior to any decision that we make. So in any event, that's I expect to see folks that are vested in this again, and also, as I said, I hate to sound like a broken record, but you know, provide your comments in clear, as concisely, and specific as possible.
All right. Thank you for your time.
Sure.
Could I ask Rich Childers to answer a question for me? Would you mind, Rich? Because if you'd come up here.
I see Rich.
Now, this problem that this gentleman has brought before us, I was not aware that these regions are being used without any possibility of harvesting the quota that's left if the sports harvest doesn't fill the quota. I thought we were putting commercial harvesters in. So what are we doing?
Yes, Commissioner Wecker. If you think the shrimp policy that was revised and adopted shortly after the crab policy does allow for what we'd call a cleanup fishery. If there's unutilized quota on the state share from the recreational fishery, the commercial fleet, we can put them in. And we've been doing that quite successfully. But the language in the crab policy, as Brian stated, is more restrictive. It says exclusive use. So, and at the time when the policy was adopted, 2010, I think the expectation was the quotas would be fully utilized. But what we're seeing now is, as Brian stated, is accurate. There's quota that's being left in some areas like Hood Canal that is just not being utilized because the recreational fishery with full seasons is not harvesting the full share.
Okay. So, thanks.
Commissioner Kerman. In those areas that Mr. Mackey mentioned, can you speak to the growth or decrease in harvest by the commercial or and the same as it relates to the recreational? It says it's exclusive recreational. So is that fishery pattern increasing in harvest or decreasing in harvest since the policy implementation?
Well, in the crab policy, C-3609, the areas that are exclusive recreational are marine areas 10, 11, 12, and 13. The area where most of the state quota is not being utilized is Hood Canal, and it's 50 to 60,000 pounds not being utilized. Now, part of this is what we're seeing is this recent upward trend in the crab abundance. There's just so much crab in these areas, even with full seasons, the recreational fishery is not catching all the share. The number of commercial permits in Puget Sound is stagnant. It's a limited entry, 249 permits. It's been that way since the 80s. On the recreational side, we're seeing relatively stable harvest group size as well, just about 240,000 recreational endorsements. What's changing is that abundance. There's just everyone's going out getting limits, and it's just even with that, there's with quota increases with the tribes, we're just not fully utilizing the shares.
Thank you.
I hope that answers your question.
You did. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Brian. Ron Hayes, please. And Don.
Good morning, ladies and gents. I would echo Dave Kroonquist's introductory statements to the extent that I appreciate what you do, and yet I have some serious concerns. I've been sport fishing in Washington for over 40 years, and I've been living in Port Townsend for about 13 years. And for openers, I'd like to say that hopefully the sport fishing community has emphasized the fact that we spend a lot of money all over the state. I spend money. My friends know that I spend way too much money on fishing, but it's good for the economy. And I think we have business owners here who can appreciate the hotel, motel, gas, tackle, and you name it. My real concern right now is regards the halibut season, and I think we're talking about issues of life and death. And that's simply because the season is certain days, in the case of the coast, maybe 4 days or 3 days, 11 days in other areas. And especially for the fellows and gals who can only fish on weekends because they work. I can fish any day because I'm retired. But the point is that people in small boats with maybe only 1 or 2 days to fish, they might actually have a tendency to go out in really bad weather. And I'm quite concerned that eventually somebody's going to die. And I think the simple solution is do what British Columbia does. A season that has weeks and months, any day of the week, and a card that says you may catch only 6 in a season. Maybe our season could be 4 fish. Maybe it could be 10. I don't know. But I think we're going to have a serious problem when somebody dies, or maybe a whole boatload of people die because they went out in bad weather because they were only allowed to fish on day X. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Dan. Questions? None. Brian? Helling.
Helling.
Helling? And Ron?
Good morning. Thanks for letting me speak. I'm really happy with the testimony given by Ron Gardner and Don Dieback. I think that's exactly what I wanted to tell you this morning, so I won't waste your time and everything, but it's really important that we get a handle on recreational halibut fishing in Puget Sound, because I fish it every year, and there's just a limited number of days that I can go out, and if we could choose the days when the weather is good and the current isn't so bad, it would make for a much safer experience out there. And there's a lot of recreational boaters that fish for halibut, and some days we're really taking our lives into our hand. And Ron Gardner's suggestion of the catch record that was separate, that would be turned in shortly after the end of the season, is excellent. And if I knew he was going to speak, I probably wouldn't have come up here. But I think those testimonies are very good, and I hope you consider them. And there's a lot of us that are very interested. We come to your public meetings that the staff holds. We just had one here in Port Townsend, and we really appreciate that. It feels like, you know, they don't necessarily agree with us, but we appreciate the opportunity to get our 2 cents in. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. I think all the comments on halibut, the recreational, are falling on receptive ears, so we appreciate all of the comments that have been put forward on that. Thank you. John McMillan, please. And Brian?
Good morning. I'm Ryan Haley, and I'm in Ferndale, Washington. I'd like to talk to you this morning about how and why we are non-tribal commercial fishermen are proactive in the Puget Sound commercial crab fishery. This is an ancient and, I believe, an honorable profession. This resource belongs to all of us, and we, the commercial fishermen, are the avenue to supplying crab to the general population, including grocery stores, restaurants, and a little lady down the street that loves her crab. It is important for us to have a viable fishery now and in the future for our kids to utilize. To accomplish this, we as non-tribal commercial fishermen are strictly regulated by Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, as well as by ourselves as an industry. For example, the state law requires each crab pot to have two escape rings to allow small crab to escape. But most of us non-tribal commercial crabbers use four escape rings to further help the juvenile crab escape more easily. Historically, it was us commercial crab fishermen that implemented the mandatory use of escape rings, rot cord, and a determined minimum crab size. Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife has some excellent law enforcement officers that work extremely well with us. I am personally on a first-name basis with them. I often contact them for clarification on laws to make sure that I am operating under the guidelines of the law. They often stop by my gear shed where I work on my pots or by my boat just to say hi and check in to see if there are any issues with the fleet. The wildlife officers and fishermen have a great mutual respect for each other, and we work wonderful together. The Puget Sound non-tribal crab fishery has an accounting system that is rock solid. Our buyers give us fishermen a fish ticket with the date, catch area, price per pound, number of pounds, including any take-home crab. The buyer must also email or fax a copy of the fish ticket to the resource manager by 10 a.m. the following morning or be subject by penalty of a fine. This accounting system gives a state resource manager accurate daily tallies of how many pounds of crab were caught at each area, therefore allowing the resource manager to properly manage our fishery. I believe that we are great stewards of the resource, and we respectfully request to be put on a February agenda for review of policy C3609.
Thank you, Brian.
Any questions? Dave Steinbaugh, please.
And John?
Commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is John McMillan, and I am the science director for Trout Unlimited's Wild Steelhead Initiative. And I'm going to keep it short and sweet. Really, I'm here today just to touch base on the North Olympic Peninsula steelhead regulations, and I wanted to thank the department for all their hard work in convening the North Coast Steelhead Policy Advisory Group and working through a tough series of layers of culture that we deal with in the steelhead world and coming up with some wonderful recommendations. So kudos to the department for that. I would also like to thank the commission for hearing all the testimony and for being willing to discuss all of these, again, sometimes difficult issues with us. Again, I want to reiterate our support for the North Coast policy advisory recommendations on the steelhead season, which includes the release of wild steelhead and rainbow trout, the implementation of selective gear rules, and a trial reach for no fishing from boat in the uppermost Hoh River. And I don't think this is the last you're going to be seeing of me for the next couple of years. We've spent hundreds of hours working on this topic, and we would also like to say that we're looking forward to moving on to the next topic, which is trying to get a catch and release season open on the Skagit River. We think the population of steelhead is doing well. We applaud the department for taking that lead, and we're looking forward to providing them support as we move forward. So, in close, I just want to say thank you for all the hard work you do, because I know it's not easy.
Thank you, John.
Yeah.
Questions? Dave, you're the last word.
I expect more people to be commenting on the sport fishing rules, too. I just want to reiterate, I do support all the rules. My name is Dave Steinbaugh. I own the fly shop in Port Angeles. I have since 1998. I used to guide for 25 years before I quit a few years ago just to run the shop. I employ guides at the shop. I send clients out to the other fishing guys in Forks. So I am not anti-guide. I am pro-guide. but we need to make it so we have a little more regulation with the fishing guides that are maximizing the impact on the fishery out there. Fishing guides shouldn't have much more rights and entitlements like some of them do think. If they have more rights, they need to have more responsibility. And we're just trying to rein in the techniques and rein in the onslaught on these fish, not only from guys, but by the boat fishermen and by the number of people that are out there. So the no fishing from boat rule, like I said in Olympia, I believe is one of the most important rules. The best rules, because it affects everybody equally. It's not a fly fishing versus gear fishing rule. That will affect everybody equally and will be the easiest rule to enforce. But I'm not throwing guides under the bus. I just want to have sustainable fisheries so everybody, guides and non-guides, have opportunity in the future. Thanks, and thanks for all your hard work.
Thank you, Dan.
Yes, Mr. Grable.
Dave, you know, one of the topics that has kind of bubbled up in this process is the potential limiting the number of guides at work, the peninsula, mm-hmm. rivers. And I was actually surprised at the number of guides that I've talked to that are in favor of that. What I haven't seen is any template to proceed with that. You know, what system, you know, if we're going to limit guides, what's the process and what would that look like? I would like to see from you or other members of the advisory committee some suggestions on that, because I'm not sure which way to go. You know, Idaho has a way that they manage guides. Montana does. This would kind of be, we're getting into a new area in Washington if we do something like this.
And there's a number of guides that want to pull the rug out from under everybody else. Once they're there and they're established, right. They want to make it so nobody else can come in, and that's not really fair. Maybe you right. have it. Maybe you have a system similar to the saltwater charters, where there's X number of licenses. You don't let any more licenses get bought in the state for fishing on the rivers, and then they have to buy the licenses from people that probably aren't using them anymore.
Exactly. You know, and I think it's important that we hear from the advisory group. I know a lot of guides in the region that I'm from, and I always encourage them to come to us. Otherwise, they feel that rules are being imposed on them.
Right.
All right. So I would encourage the advisory group and individuals such as yourself to come forward with some suggestions so that we're working on this together and they don't feel like we've just imposed a system
right.
on them.
And it's changing regulations for guides is not going to make an incredible hardship on these guys. I know those guys. I've fished around them for years. So they may have a couple regulation for this is like for 2 or 3 months of the season. It's maybe going to impact them for a couple months on a couple stretches of river where we aren't treating every fish the same. These are native steelhead that are more precious than perhaps any fish out there. We're treating them like they're hatchery coho, treating them like they're triploid trout. They're different animals, and they need more respect.
Yeah,
because they're going away.
I agree.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
thank you. Commissioner Keough?
Yeah, I have a follow-up question. I do think, and I do recall kind of the conversation about guides and perhaps limiting the number in the context of this rulemaking process. I guess I have a question, though, for staff. I mean, is that something if we were to the question I guess I have is that something that's within the commission power, or would that be a statutory change? If anybody knows that. Because if it's, you know, certainly the commission could.
Mike knows.
Oh.
Deputy Chief.
Just to be clear, we're talking about a limited entry scheme, right? And that would require legislation.
That's what I was thinking. So,
sure. I mean, I think certainly the commission could support such a legislative change and maybe even make an initiative if that's what the commission would like to do.
So to that extent, I guess we would like to have input from this group and then decide how to proceed.
But since legislation takes years to enact, we have a great opportunity right now to make a major change on impact by enacting these rules.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's just a no-brainer.
If I may, legislation does not always take years.
Well, I know.
Because I'm only saying that because I was involved with the, creating the endorsement stamp for the Columbia River, and that was done in a short time and managed to do it in one session.
Great.
So, you know, I think it's a matter of communication and simplification. This could be contentious. You know, we're talking about limiting non-residents and then limiting a user group. But this is not unprecedented in surrounding states. And but it's something that is we need to address, and we want to work with you to get that process started.
Great. Yeah. Thank you very much.
And that brings, excuse me, to a close public input. Let me do say, however, that I think to a person, everything that was raised today was extremely valuable, and it did, as I said earlier, fall on very receptive ears, and we look forward to a follow-up for some of the suggestions that commissioners made from various groups out there, the crab groups, the halibut group, to provide us with more information so we can look forward to taking some actions that would hopefully alleviate some of the issues that were raised. But thank you to all of you. This is exactly how the system should work and why we love to come over to places other than Olympia to meet with you. And we'll look forward to hearing more as the day, as our meeting moves on.